Okay, welcome to the February 10th, 2026 meeting of the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board. For everyone joining us in the meeting room, please turn off your silence your phone, your cell phones. This meeting is being webcast and recorded, so please speak clearly. This meeting is being conducted in physical location, is also available via remote access for people who only want to listen or watch the meeting. The board's customary webcast is available. For those in the Zoom meeting, you will be muted with your camera off until it's your turn to speak. The host will then unmute you and ask you to turn on your camera if you have one. When you are done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you will be placed on mute, your camera turned off, and you will remain in the Zoom meeting until the completion of the item, and then you may choose to exit the meeting or continue. Board Member Wright, would you lead us to pledge allegiance? Thank you. Madam Clerk, can we have a roll call for the quorum?
Chair Perez?
Present.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Good afternoon. Present.
Board Member Beltran? Oh, she's walking.
Almost.
Present.
Thank you. Board Member Music?
Present.
Board Member Satin?
Present.
Board Member Wright?
Present.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you. The purpose of this meeting is for regional board members to obtain testimony and information from concerned and affected parties with the Colorado River Basin region regarding water quality issues. Okay, item two, public forum. We welcome hearing from the public at this meeting. Any person wishing to speak should have submitted speaker requests as described in the agenda instructions for those items listed on today's agenda. You will make comments at the time the item is being considered. If you wish to speak on an item that is not on the agenda, you may speak now during the public forum. Comments will generally be limited to 3 minutes. The board clerk can now identify the speakers who have submitted cards for the public forum.
We do not have any.
Okay, thank you. Now we'll move on to agenda item three, which is the review and approval of the minutes for the board's prior meeting of December 2nd. Does any board member have comments or wish to propose changes to the minutes?
No, but I'll make a motion to approve.
Okay, do we have a second?
Seconded.
Okay. Roll call.
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, item number four, the board will now hear an update from the Laurel Firestone, our liaison to the State Water Resource Control Board.
Hi, can you hear me okay?
You sure can.
Great. Well, sorry I'm not on video, but I just have a few things to update this month. We've been doing a lot on our update to the Sacramento Delta, Bay Delta plan, and held 3 days of public workshops on our revised draft plan and additional CEQA documents in our staff report. And written comments were due. We'll be reviewing those and hoping to have a final out for our vote later this year. We also adopted the 303D list for the 2026 California Integrated Report, and that includes the Colorado River Basin region. We are continuing to hold the public working group sessions for the agricultural expert panel. So this is a panel that has been charged with questions related to our irrigated lands regulatory program, particularly around nitrogen loading of groundwater and they are working on finalizing a draft report that should be coming out in the next month or so for public comment and workshop. We have posted our draft guidelines on the Prop 4 border funding. So that's open for public comment, and we're hoping to be able to adopt that soon so that we can get some good applications for border projects for that funding. I think the only other thing I wanted to highlight for the board was that we are planning on having our annual Salt and Sea meeting probably May 20th. So you can pencil that in, May 20th, for the annual Salt and Sea meeting for those that want to participate. I know usually a lot of this board does. I'm not sure the location. It may be that this one isn't down by the sea this year, but I will let everyone know as soon as we have a final word on that. And I think those are the things I wanted to just mention, and happy to answer any questions, and hopefully I can do a more comprehensive one next month.
Any questions? Thank you. Safe travels.
Thanks.
Bye. Okay, the board will now consider items on the uncontested calendar. All items appearing under uncontested items calendars are acted upon by one motion without discussion. There is one item on today's uncontested calendar, which is the waste discharge requirements order for drenched or fill discharges to the waters of the state for Sapphire Solar project located in Riverside. And regarding the uncontested calendar, does any board member wish to remove an item, which is the only one though? Okay. All right. Madam Clerk, nothing about this uncontested item either?
No.
Okay. All right. Can we have a motion to approve the uncontested items?
A motion to approve.
Seconded.
Madam Chair, I have a question.
Yes.
Where it says the discharger is going to maintain or preserve a piece of property, what is that? What's an example of what they're going to be required to do to that parcel?
That typically means like a conservation easement where it prevents people from building.
Pardon?
It prevents people from building or something, developing that parcel. It's a conservation easement.
Okay. That's it.
Okay.
Well, quick follow-up question.
Go ahead.
Do we know where that's going to be? I didn't see it in the mapping documentation.
I think I'd like to invite staff to address that.
Thank you.
Sorry about that. Alyssa Darrow, environmental scientist in the NPDES unit. Yeah, it's going to be in northern, just north of 40, San Bernardino County. And in the performance report update later, I will show a figure that shows where that preserve is and some photos of what it looks like, actually. But yeah, we do know where it's going to be and what resources are present on the site.
There was nothing closer?
Yeah, so that's part of what we factor in. Like, we try to find a site that's as close as possible to the mitigation site, should be as close as possible to the impact site. But sometimes there's other factors, you know, whether it's habitat for certain species, we're trying to allow them to satisfy requirements for different agencies at the same time. That is definitely one of the things we look for, is how close the mitigation site is to the impact site, for sure.
Thank you.
I have a quick question. Do we have access to the biological opinion from Fish and Wildlife?
Yeah, we do. We do review those. Like, we make sure that, you know, the mitigation measures required by Fish and Wildlife are incorporated in some way into our order. It's not a condition of our order, but we do mention them in the avoidance and minimization section that we've at least, you know, reviewed and made sure that Fish and Wildlife has had an opportunity to provide input as far as mitigation measures for impacts to those sensitive species.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And just as a point of order, we already had a motion. We have a pending motion, and there was a second. So the next step will have a vote.
Roll call, please. Thank you. Thank you, David.
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. The board member will, the board will now consider items on the uncontested calendar. I'm sorry, contested calendar. Boy, I'm behind now. And discussion of the calendar items for adoption. There's only one item, waste discharge requirements, order and monitoring and reporting programs, NPDES permit number CA010447 for Valley Sanitary District Wastewater Treatment Plant, Riverside County. I now I'm opening the hearing for agenda item six. Which is the waste discharge requirement order, corresponding monitoring for the Valley Sanitary District Wastewater. And it, prior to this meeting, the board staff submitted a revised tentative order in response to the comments documents addressing written comments from the discharger. Copies of these documents have been posted online and placed on the table in the back of the boardroom. And Madam Clerk, do we have speaker cards? I know you'll be.
We do.
Okay. Go ahead.
Do we have to take the oath first?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, I will now administer the oath to all persons intending to speak on this item. Raise your right hand and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth under penalty of perjury? If so, answer, I do.
I do.
Okay. Please state your name, affiliation, whether you have taken the oath before testifying. The orders of the speakers for this item are a presentation from Fatima Al-Rahim, board staff, comments from discharger, comments from public, board members' comments, discussion, and closed hearing. The hearing is on agenda six now. Okay, it's closed. So sorry, I'm going super fast. Go ahead.
It's okay. Good afternoon, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Fatima Al-Rahim. I am a water resource control engineer in the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES unit, and I have taken the oath. In this presentation, I will provide information that's relevant to the proposed order and pertains to the NPDES permit renewal for the Valley Sanitary District Wastewater Treatment Plant. Next slide, please. This presentation will include facility overview and background information, Valley Sanitary District's comments on the draft or tentative order, and staff responses. Next slide, please. The facility is located at 45500 Van Buren Street in the city of Indio, Riverside County, near the intersection of Interstate 10 and Highway 86 Expressway, as shown by the map. Next slide. Valley Sanitary District is the owner and operator of the Valley Sanitary District Wastewater Treatment Plant, a publicly owned treatment works facility. The wastewater treatment plant has a design capacity of 12.5 million gallons per day, and dischargers treated this infected wastewater to the Coachella Valley Stormwater Channel, a water of the United States. Next slide, thanks. This is an aerial image of the Valley Sanitary District Wastewater Treatment Plant. The wastewater treatment plant consists of two separate treatment systems, an activated sludge system and an oxidation pond system. This picture shows the facility's activated sludge treatment system, which consists of anoxic selectors, aeration basins, secondary clarifiers, and a chlorine contact chamber. The design capacity of the activated sludge system is 10 MGD. Next slide. This picture shows the facility oxidation pond system, which consists of two oxidation ponds and two cells. The design capacity of the oxidation pond is 2.5 MGD. Treated effluent from each treatment system, i.e. the activated sludge system and the oxidation pond system, is disinfected with sodium hypochlorite in separate chlorine contact tanks and dechlorinated prior to discharge. Treated wastewater is discharged from discharge point 001 to Coachella Valley stormwater channel. Currently, the discharge by the 2020 order and NPDES permit adopted on March 5, 2020 and is due for renewal. The 2020 order expired on March 31, 2025, but has been administratively extended pending the adoption of the proposed order. The purpose of adopting the proposed order is to update the 2020 WDR's order and to bring Valley Sanitary District Wastewater Treatment Plant up to date and in compliance with the regional, state, and federal regulations. The facility is regulated under the National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, a program. NPDES permits need to be renewed every 5 years. In general, the permit requirements include discharge prohibitions, effluent limitations, and monitoring and reporting requirements. The proposed order incorporates current requirements of the basin plan, as well as federal and state laws and regulations, including California Toxic Rule, CTR, and the State Implementation Policy, SIP. The proposed permit was released for a 30-day public comment period beginning on December 5, 2025, and ending on January 5, 2026. Staff received comments from the discharger. All of the comments and detailed responses can be found in the response to comments in the board's agenda binder. In the following slides, I will summarize Valley Sanitary District's significant comments and staff's responses. The discharger's first comment was in regards to Section 4A1D, page 9, effluent limitations for bacteria, in the tentative order, where the discharger requested to clarify the requirements for bacteria effluent limitations and use either the most probable number, MPN, or coliform-forming units, CFUs, as the bacterial indicator measurement. Staff response. Regional board staff reviewed the basin plan and determined that the correct bacterial indicator measurement for the discharge was the most probable number and revised the tentative order to use MPN as the bacterial measurement. The discharger's second comment was in regards to Section 5B2, page E17, preparation and implementation of detailed TRE work plan in the tentative order, where the discharger requested to clarify what level of detail is required regarding a detailed toxicity reduction evaluation or TRE work plan. Staff response. To clarify the level of a detailed TRE, Section 5B2, page E17, preparation and implementation of a detailed TRE work plan was revised to explain that the detailed TRE work plan should include the categories of information outlined in the generic TRE work plan with specific adaptation to the circumstances of that particular toxicity event. Next slide, please. The discharger's third comment was in regards to Section 5A8, page E16, accelerated monitoring requirements in the tentative order, where the discharger requested to clarify if all three species need to be analyzed or just the most sensitive species if it fails the toxicity test. Staff response. The tentative order language was revised to include the species that exhibited toxicity and now states once the discharger becomes aware of this result, the discharger shall implement an accelerated monitoring schedule using species that exhibited toxicity. In other words, only the most sensitive species needs to be analyzed if it fails the toxicity test. The discharger's fourth comment was in regards to Section 8B, page 820, monitoring location RSW002, in the tentative order, where the discharger requested to change the language to, if no receiving water is present at RSW001, no receiving water monitoring data is required for station RSW002. Staff response, request change rejected. Monitoring at RSW002 is crucial for providing staff with receiving water data for reasonable potential analysis, RPA. Therefore, the language will remain as, if no receiving water is present at RSW002, no receiving water monitoring data is required for station RSW002. The discharger's fifth comment was in regards to Section 10D, page E26, DMRQA, in the tentative order, where the discharger requested to revise the discharge monitoring report quality assurance, DMRQA, language, which requires the discharger to submit files in comma-separated value format, CSV, from the proficiency testing vendor. The discharger indicated that the vendor does not provide the files in CSV format, and the vendor only provides the files in PDF format. Staff response, the language will remain as is. However, regional board staff reached out to the State Board Office of Information Management and Analysis, or OIMA, and confirmed that the discharger will be able to submit the files in PDF format, provided that the PDF copy is not scanned or password protected. Next slide. The discharger's sixth comment was in regards to Table 6, page 8, cyanide average monthly limit in the tentative order, where the discharger requested to revise the average monthly limit for cyanide from 4.38 microgram per liter to 4.4 microgram per liter, since the current contract lab used by Valley Sanitary District reports detection limits to one decimal place only. Staff response, requested changes accepted. This change primarily concerns significant figures. The tentative order language was revised to change the average monthly limit for cyanide from 4.38 microgram per liter to 4.4 microgram per liter. Staff received other comments from the discharger resulting in clarifications or editorial changes already addressed in the permit. This concludes my discussion of the discharger's comment. In conclusion, staff recommends that the board adopt the proposed order as revised on January 13, 2026. Thank you for your time and attention, Chair Perez and board members. This concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Do you have any questions?
Do we know what percent of the discharge makes it to the Salton Sea? They're doing, I don't know, 13,000 to 14,000 acre feet a year.
I know that the discharger discharges 12.5 MGD a day, but I don't know how much that.
And it's an unlined pond, right? It's unlined, the channel.
Yeah, it discharges to the Coachella Valley stormwater channel.
So water is seeping into the ground?
I think it ends to the Salton Sea.
I'm sorry?
It will end to going to the Salton Sea.
Yeah, but not all of it.
Yeah, like I don't know what percentage.
Miles.
Yeah.
I mean, some's going to evaporate. Do we don't know how much.
I don't know that information, no.
Do we know how close any production wells are to that channel?
I don't think that's something that we've looked into. In terms of groundwater impacts, so are you talking about protecting
groundwater? Yes, groundwater impacts, and are there, you know.
What part of the valley is this in? Indio.
So Indio, it's at the south end. Salton Sea.
There are probably would you guess that there are a few down gradient?
The thing is, I don't have information about the groundwater. I do surface water, so, yeah.
So I guess my question is, if this was a new plant today and water was going into the aquifer, is this level of treatment sufficient. Board Member Music, I think for the discharge to surface water, we follow the federal requirement. It's pretty stringent compared to water discharge to land. So by that concern, the level we implement shouldn't pose any threat or impact to groundwater.
So you're saying this is treated more stringently than if it went to groundwater, to an aquifer?
Yes.
And it's not tertiary, is it?
Well, it's not tertiary, but in terms of bacteria, in terms of metal, in terms of TSS, so all concern is much stringent compared to discharge to groundwater, the permit we issued.
Okay. It's
concerning.
So, you know, there was a septic prohibition up in Yucca Valley.
Yes.
And so they have to discharge at a certain level, which I think exceeds this level, because they're going to an aquifer. So why wouldn't this, how would this be more stringent? It just...
Well, if you're talking some particular constituents, because I think Yucca Valley, the concern is the nutrient, nitrate, nitride. And for us, we do monitor nitrate, nitride in the receiving water. And so far, my recollection, all the monitoring data show is below the threshold, below the MCO. So even that...
Oh, you mean their discharge from their plant is below the MCL for nitrate?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Thank you. Okay. Comments from the discharger?
Yes, we have Ian Wilson.
Hello. Thank you, members of the board. I'm Ian Wilson. I'm the wastewater operations manager for Valley Sanitary District. We are here today just to basically thank the board for receiving our comments, taking them into consideration. We had a very productive meeting with Logan and Fatima later in December of 2025, where we did, address some of the issues that we had during the review of the draft NPDES permit. They were very welcoming with our comments. We did submit, a formal written comments just to make sure that these were observed. And we are in favor of the proposed permit. We felt things were very fair. All our comments were taken into consideration, and we have no objections to what the Water Board came up for. Thank you.
Do you have any idea what percent ends up in the Salton Sea?
I do not have any percentage.
Okay. Thank you.
We do discharge roughly 6.5. Our design capacity is 12.5, but of that 6.5, I don't know how much goes out there.
Okay.
Yeah, we are the first discharger in the channel. There's other treatment plants downstream from us, as well as, farm irrigation that leaches out there as well. So what percentage of our water makes it there, I don't know.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other board member comments or questions? All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Just to put it in perspective, I have here that, like, a characterization of the effluent, as in table F7, in terms of nitrate as nitrogen, it's, maximum daily is 5.4 milligrams per liter, versus, and then an average daily would be 3.8 milligrams per liter. The MCL here is 10. So if this were a non-15 discharge, it would be looking pretty good as well on that account. It's significantly less than the MCL.
Thank you.
Thank you, David. Comments from the public? Nobody?
No.
Okay. And board member comments and discussion? I know we already had four member music here.
I'll move to approve.
Okay. Second?
Second.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Thank you. Okay, we're moving on to items 7 through 10, staff presentations on mid-year performance update.
Don't say that. You'll jinx it. Beefield's like talking a lot.
Hello. All right. Good afternoon, Chair Perez, members of the board, staff, and members of the public. I'm Michael Plasencia, the executive officer. The Colorado River Basin Regional Water Quality Control Board is the public agency with primary responsibility for the protection of ground and surface water quality for all beneficial uses, covering 20,000 square miles, which includes all of Imperial County, as well as portions of Riverside, San Diego, and San Bernardino counties. This information item will provide an update on the status of program activities, metrics, and demonstrate how the programs are integrating the objectives of the strategic plan. This update is provided twice annually, so we changed the format for this mid-year performance update to focus on the staff that execute this mission, their units, and particular programs. The picture shown on this slide is of the shoreline at the north end of the Salton Sea, viewed while looking south. I chose to open with this image because the Salton Sea and the playa that is exposed as the shoreline recedes remains a significant threat, challenge, and priority for our board, and efforts to support projects and partnerships at the Salton Sea are ongoing. I hope as resources and work continue to be committed, I will be able to continue to report back to this board on positive strides and noteworthy progress. In the coming year, we will be working through an update to our strategic plan, which was adopted by this board in March of 2023. I don't believe that the priorities have changed much in the intervening years, but as was originally articulated during the workshops held to develop the strategic plan and at the adoption hearing, it is a living document and will benefit from periodic revision. We will schedule workshops later this year and hope to present an updated plan by the end of the calendar year. It is therefore beneficial to briefly revisit the strategic plan during this meeting, as the programs and projects you will hear about should be aligned with the greater strategic direction. Each of the programs has integrated these strategic objectives into their activities. Next slide, please. The first objective is programmatic activities, including permits, planning, and enforcement. We continue our efforts to commit our limited resources on projects and implementation programs proportionate to their threat to water quality, and conduct enforcement that is equitable and transparent. Next slide. Our second objective is to strategically engage underserved and underrepresented communities. We have successfully expanded our outreach this past year and will continue by increasing the number of staff we deploy to community outreach and engagement events. Further, our initiatives in tribal engagement and collaboration with community organizations continue to foster stronger connections. It is my hope that these relationships will also yield measurable improvements in water quality and environmental health benefits for these communities as we continue to work in partnership. Next slide, please. The third objective is internal process improvements. I will highlight some achievements since this board last heard a performance update. For evidence of internal upward mobility, I give the example of Dr. Kai Dunn, who was recently promoted as our new Assistant Executive Officer. Kai and I will continue to work on staff engagement and cultural improvements, staff development, and workplace communication. To that end, I will be developing and implementing a reorganization to ensure we have a reporting structure that makes the most of our staff and is aligned toward our strategic priorities. This reorg will be conducted as a phased effort, and I will provide a board update at a future meeting. Now I would like to underscore several administrative accomplishments we have achieved. First, we have improved utilization of staffing resources dedicated to individual permits. One way we have done this is by continuing to enroll dischargers in general orders when it is applicable to them. Where appropriate, general orders are as effective at protection of surface and groundwater quality as individually developed permits. But as general orders are standardized and less complex, they require far less time to develop, freeing up technical staff to work on other projects. Additionally, we are also continuing to develop templates to streamline workflows, moving some work tasks to the cloud, and using software such as SharePoint to allow staff to work synchronously on shared documents while reducing cases where there are multiple versions of the same document floating around. Next slide. The Colorado River Basin Water Board completes its work of protecting regional water quality through five principal functions, each of which you will hear from today. And each of these technical units was invited to select a project or program to highlight as part of this mid-year update. Next, I'll welcome our Assistant Executive Officer, Kai Dunn, to introduce each of our units.
Good afternoon, Chair Perez, member of the board, member of the public. I'm Kai Dunn. I'm the new Assistant Executive Officer for the region. I would like to introduce Region 7 organizational structure. On the top, the executive leadership to provide strategic direction and oversight. There are two technical sections to oversee surface water and the groundwater program, such as planning, permitting, compliance, and enforcement. Each section contains two technical units. Surface water section has a water quality standard unit and MPDES unit. For groundwater section, include cleanup unit and the land disposal unit. Also, don't forget our administrative and support team to provide operational support and customer service. First, I would like to introduce Hilda Viscas to give an update of administrative support team. Hilda.
Thank you, Kai. Good afternoon, Chair Perez, members of the board, regional board staff, and members of the public. My name is Hilda Vasquez. I am the supervisor for the Administrative and Support Services Unit. Next slide, please. The administrative unit consists of two analysts, one office technician, and one supervisor. The administrative unit works behind the scenes to support all staff and serve the public. They work very hard and go out of their way to meet internal and external deadlines. Without them, the office would not be as productive and successful. Administrative staff manage a variety of administrative and executive work. The processes followed in the administrative unit come from the State Water Resources Control Board Division of Administrative Services, the State Water Resources Control Board Executive Office, and from Regional Board Management. The workload for each administrative staff member is listed on the slides to follow. I will highlight a couple of tasks in each slide. Next slide, please. Okay. This slide summarizes the board clerk's Mary Castaneda's workload. Mary works with management and technical staff preparing board agendas and logistics for the board meetings. She also assists board members with various travel requests and reimbursements. Next slide. This slide summarizes the front desk Helen Gout's workload. Helen works with all staff to process letters and public record requests. The total number of letters processed from July through December is 478, and the total number of Public Records Act requests processed from July to December is 73. Next slide, please. This slide summarizes the analyst CJ Jasinicki's workload. CJ works with all staff to process procurement documents and manages our fleet vehicles to ensure they are in good working condition. This fiscal year, an electric vehicle will be added to our office fleet. Next slide. This slide summarizes the administrative officer's workload, my workload. I work with all staff on various human resources and facility requests. I also work with managers processing documents and processing hiring documents and employee onboarding and offboarding. This concludes my update. Thank you for your time. Next update is from Emma McCorkle, Senior Environmental Scientist of the Basin Planning Unit.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Perez, board members, and members of the public. My name is Emma McCorkle. I'm Senior Environmental Scientist and Unit Chief of the Water Quality Standards and Non-Point Source Unit. Next slide, please. The unit is currently fully staffed with six staff, a mix of environmental scientists, Francisco Costa, Ryan Colhane, Samantha Shapiro, and Raveline Kaur, a water resource control engineer, Rosalind Fleming, and an engineering geologist, Hajar Dawoodi. Our unit is the planning unit for the region. The unit houses the basin planning, total maximum daily load, or TMDL, integrated report, non-point source, and irrigated lands programs. These programs have large projects that take multiple years to complete due to the amount of research, external approvals, and public processes. The unit updates the basin plan and determines what water quality standards are best for the region. This work is done through basin plan amendments, which Samantha, Hajar, and Francisco have been working on. In addition, our basin plan must be reviewed every 3 years for the triennial review. This year, we're on cycle again for that, and Raveline is taking on that task. Using the adopted standards, the integrated report assesses and evaluates collected data to determine impairments in the region's waters every 6 years. Rosalind has been the lead on that program, and State Board just approved our latest report last week. Once the impairments have been identified, TMDLs can be developed to set limits on pollutant discharges and identify sources of those pollutants. Ryan, Hajar, and Raveline have been working on TMDLs that you've seen and some that are forthcoming. One of the main ways that we implement TMDLs is through our four agricultural general orders and the coalitions authorized through them. These orders outline monitoring and best practices that should be followed to reduce pollutants entering surface waters. The Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program is the largest component of the non-point source program. Francisco and Ryan work with the authorized coalitions to ensure compliance with our orders. Because the performance targets for the unit are very narrow, these are the main goals that we plan to accomplish before the end of this fiscal year. We plan to submit the New River Ammonia TMDL for scientific peer review. It will be tentatively considered by this board later this calendar year. The only project we plan to bring to this board before July is the Alamo River Chloride and Indicator Bacteria. This is one of our performance targets for the year, and we are on track to complete it. Staff are finalizing the response to comments now, and you'll likely see the project sometime in May. The Imperial Valley Pyrethroid Pesticides TMDL was adopted by this board in July 2025. Staff have been responding to comments and holding state board member briefings in preparation for a state board hearing tentatively this April. Finally, the tribal beneficial uses, statewide mercury objectives, and administrative updates basin plan amendment will be submitted to the Office of Administrative Law later this month. This is the final step for this amendment. Once approved by OAL, the basin plan will be updated with the approved changes. Next slide. Also of note are our salt and sea efforts. We will be continuing our water quality monitoring at the salt and sea with the Department of Fish and Wildlife into this year, as shown in the lower photo. They provide us that wonderful airboat that you see in the photo. We have also partnered with researchers from Loma Linda and UCLA who are able to access the two sites at the northern end of the sea that we're unable to get to easily, and we thank them a lot for that. We will also be continuing our monitoring at the sedimentation basins at the species conservation habitats, as seen in the top photo. Our funding will last into next year, and we are applying for additional funding for the future. We also have amendments in the work for beneficial uses.
Staff are continuing to work on the salt and sea use attainability analysis to change the aquatic beneficial use of the sea to inland saline from warm freshwater. Staff have expanded a project that was intended to designate beneficial uses for the species conservation habitats. Under guidance from EPA, we plan to create a wide designation to encompass the majority of the planned wetland projects around the sea. Next slide. In addition to the programs mentioned before, the unit also works to improve relationships with area tribes, community groups, and the general public. The region's tribal coordinator, Samantha Shapiro, will go over our current outreach efforts and our program spotlight.
Good afternoon, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. Thank you for the opportunity to talk about our outreach and engagement. My name is Samantha Shapiro, and I'm an environmental scientist and tribal coordinator with the Water Quality Standards and Nonpoint Source Unit. When I joined this office 2 years ago, outreach was being revitalized due to shifts in communication from the COVID-19 pandemic. Local community members, groups, and tribes have minimal working knowledge about what we work on at the regional board. Additionally, some communities don't know how to attend meetings, get involved, and take part in our decision-making. If community members don't know about us, how can they trust us to hold dischargers accountable to water quality standards? Most community members interested in regional water quality have not attended in-person meetings for projects. As we've worked with local community groups, we've gotten ideas for how we can improve our messaging and meeting planning so we may have better attendance. We aim to approach outreach in our region through trust building, transparency, timeliness, technical assistance, and by showing up for community members. We want to make sure that communities across the region can get involved so their perspectives are included in our decision making. Next slide, please. We conduct outreach at local events and in meetings for community groups. Our goal is to connect with the communities that are in the region and ensure that the work we are doing is beneficial to them. Existing outreach materials include pamphlets, coloring books, and informational booklets provided by State Board and written to be used statewide. Most of my priorities have been to create region-specific materials that share the work that our regional board does. I'm making new materials, which include a new brochure, new program-specific fact sheets, and graphics to align with other state and regional board branding. You'll see in the packet for this presentation that we've included examples of the fact sheets. One key change implemented was plain language explanations about programs to help people understand the work that we do. Fact sheets also include tangible ways for community members to get involved and take some kind of action in our fact sheets. This could include upcoming workshops or meeting dates. If regulated parties and impacted community members knew about our upcoming decisions, they may be able to be engaged in our decision making. We also want to reach people during events or provide a form of educational outreach beyond our handouts, flyers, and other materials. For example, because harmful algal blooms are an ongoing health issue in the region, we are planning to create a poster for information about HABs in regional waters. This will include examples of what HABs look like, as well as information about how to report HAB events. In line with the language access policy from State Board, we want to ensure that outreach materials are in languages that community members understand. This can ensure meaningful outreach. We are implementing this in all programs, but the site cleanup program outreach is the first. We continue to translate and provide interpretation in Spanish. Next slide, please. A lot of my work involves meeting with local community organizations. I've liaised with local partners to discuss some of the following regional issues, including the salt and sea and water quality monitoring, drinking water and surface water quality in agricultural fields, arsenic and chromium in groundwater in the eastern Coachella Valley, harmful algal blooms across regional waters, and nutrient contamination in the New River, Alamo River, the Salton Sea, and Lake Havasu. We have also provided technical assistance to community groups and information about state grants. This helps organizations take meaningful action towards water quality issues that we care about. We will continue to support community members with reporting any environmental concerns. We also plan to explore partnerships to help prevent water pollution and restore local waters. Next slide, please. This is a list of some of the environmental justice and community groups that we have met with. Next slide, please. I realized that there were a few gaps in information about tribes in the area after reviewing contact lists from NAHC. I have worked to update our tribal contacts to all tribes with historic and current ties to our region. Cold calling, outreach, and partnerships have led to non-consultation meetings with local tribes in our region. We've met with the Torres Martinez Desert Cahuilla Indians, the Morongo Band of Mission Indians, and the Chemehuevi Indian Tribe multiple times. These meetings have sustained relationships with their environmental departments. We have conducted water quality monitoring with and provided technical assistance for tribes. The image shown on the slide was taken during Lake Havasu water quality monitoring. We are committed to maintaining contact with all tribes and are available to meet for assistance as needed. This includes sharing information such as grant opportunities or other projects that may benefit tribes. Our future goals include meeting with smaller local tribes and more tribes along the Colorado River. This may require in-person meetings as phone calls and emails can be impersonal and harder for meaningful outreach. As tribal beneficial uses remain a priority at State Board, we anticipate starting tribal beneficial uses outreach in the future. Next slide, please. We are currently planning our outreach for the upcoming year. Our anticipated events include the Riverside County Date Fair and National Date Festival, the Friends of the Desert Mountains Wildflower Festival, Tribal Earth Day events, and the Healthy Desert Healthy Youth Summit. These photos are from last year's tabling at the Fair and Wildflower Festival. Next slide, please. We plan on continuing outreach and engagement into 2026 at local community events. We work with older materials due to budgetary constraints, which can be a challenge. We would love to share newer water quality related outreach and educational materials. Storybooks and activity books for local youth can help them practice protecting water quality at a young age. One goal in the future is to update our web pages so members of the public can use it as a reliable source of information. Right now, some web pages need more updated information. We're excited to partner with different organizations to share opportunities for public participation. Sharing recent or planned regional board activities can support transparency. Our main priority is to meet community members where they are in hybrid ways. This concludes the water quality standards and non-point source update. Now Logan Robb will talk about the NPDES unit's work.
Thank you, Samantha. Good afternoon, Chair Perez, members of the board, board staff, and members of the public. My name is Logan Robb, and I'm the Regional Water Board's National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES, unit chief. Today, I will provide an overview of the unit's activities and staffing. Today, I will provide an overview of the unit's activities and staffing, our progress in reaching our performance targets for the year, and update you on a couple of priority projects. Ms. Alyssa Duro, who works in our 401 Water Quality Certification Program, will complete the unit's updates by informing you on how we're refining the processes we use to determine compensatory mitigation requirements for dredge or fill projects. Next slide. The NPDES unit handles the permitting and oversight of facilities and projects that discharge surface waters. Our wastewater program regulates discharges from wastewater treatment facilities. Our stormwater program regulates stormwater discharges from industrial facilities, construction projects, and urban areas that operate municipal separate storm sewer systems, or MS4s. Our concentrated animal feeding operations program regulates discharges from dairies, feedlots, heifer ranches, and calf nurseries, and our 401 water quality certification program regulates discharges of dredged or filled materials to waters of the U.S. and waters of the state. Next slide. The unit is staffed with 6 water resource control engineers, 1 environmental scientist, and 1 sanitary engineering associate. On the top left is a picture of Fatima Alraham, who you met earlier. Fatima is a water resource control engineer. Besides her is Thomas Brown, an engineer. On Tom's right is Alyssa Duro, an environmental scientist like myself. And beside her is Daniel Echeverria Palencia, a water resource control engineer. The cowboy on the bottom left is Jose Figueroa Acevedo, an engineer. Matthew Perez is right beside him, an engineer new to my unit. And besides Matthew is Maribel Chavone, a sanitary engineering associate. Not shown here is Jay Maripour, another engineer who is currently on a leave of absence. Next slide. Okay, that's good. The unit has made progress towards meeting our performance targets for this fiscal year. For this year, the wastewater performance targets are to perform 7 wastewater treatment plant inspections and renew 3 permits. As of today, staff have inspected 4 wastewater treatment plants, renewed 1 major permit today for Valley Sanitary District's wastewater treatment plant, 1 minor permit for Nyland's wastewater treatment plant last July, and have scheduled the permit for the Coachella Sanitary District's wastewater treatment plant permit for your consideration at your April board meeting. The stormwater performance targets for this year are to inspect 39 construction sites, 20 industrial facilities, and inspect 1 municipal stormwater program. To date, staff have inspected 23 construction sites, 12 industrial facilities, and our inspection of a local MS4 permitting program is planned for sometime in March or April. The concentrated animal feeding program's performance targets for this year is to inspect 9 facilities. Although staff have not completed any inspections to date, focusing instead on our wastewater treatment plant inspections, I expect our CAF inspections to start up since we're in good shape with our wastewater inspections. Although there are no targets set for the 401 water quality certification program, to date, the regional board has issued 7 401 water quality certifications and adopted 14 dredge to fill waste discharge requirements, including enrollments under general 401 water quality certifications and dredge or fill waste discharge requirements. 401 water quality certifications and dredge or fill waste discharge requirements are issued as applications are submitted and processed. Next slide. Staff continue to meet biweekly with Natural Resource Agency staff to discuss salt and sea management program projects and meet on a project-by-project basis with them and other state and federal stakeholders to discuss permitting. Staff are currently reviewing an application for a wetland project that will be constructed east of the community of Bombay Beach. And regarding our outreach, staff prepared and sent out an updated programmatic fact sheet for the NPDES permitting activities for this year. The updated fact sheet was posted on our webpage in the announcement section. Staff also sent out copies in Spanish and English to tribal contacts and other organizations in our community. The fact sheet was further refined this year to be more aesthetically appealing rather than in a notice format, and this is our third year preparing and sending out our fact sheet. I'll now hand the presentation over to Alyssa Duro, who will update you on our processes for determining compensatory mitigation for our 401 water quality certification program. Thank you.
Good afternoon. So far this fiscal year, the 401, next slide, please. So far this fiscal year, the 401 Water Quality Certification and Dredge or Fill Waste Discharge Requirements Program has made progress on refining the process we use to determine compensatory mitigation requirements for projects that impact waters in our region. In the past, our program has mostly relied on a minimum 1-to-1 mitigation ratio, as required by the statewide procedures for discharges of dredge or fill materials to waters of the state. Recently, based on feedback from the board and management, we've coordinated efforts to participate in trainings, engage in inter- and intra-agency collaboration on project permitting, prioritize avoidance and minimization of impacts over considering compensatory mitigation to offset impacts, and we've increased the minimum required compensatory mitigation ratio in all our permits, regardless of impacts and mitigation type or method. Next slide. The first step we've taken toward improving our process is increasing our capacity to characterize jurisdictional resources and assess impacts associated with projects. Staff have attended online and field-based aquatic resource delineation trainings to better understand how jurisdictional waters are identified and how to review aquatic resource reports submitted with permit applications. Being able to accurately identify and delineate resources helps us more accurately characterize the impacts associated with projects and make a more appropriate determination of what compensatory mitigation is necessary to offset those impacts. The photos shown here are from a recent field-based training I attended, where I had the opportunity to learn hands-on skills from experts in the field of aquatic resource identification and delineation. During this training, I also had the opportunity to collaborate with staff from other regional boards and the state board and learn more about how they assess impacts and determine compensatory mitigation requirements. Next slide. Region 7 staff have also participated in compensatory mitigation-focused webinars and inter- and intra-agency meetings where we've learned how different types and methods of compensatory mitigation work and how other agencies determine compensatory mitigation requirements. We continue to engage in regular discussions with our neighboring regional boards, as well as state and federal agencies that permit projects in our region. These include California Department of Fish and Wildlife, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, and U.S. EPA. These meetings help ensure that our requirements are appropriate to offset all the adverse impacts attributed to a project. We're also improving communication with private entities involved with compensatory mitigation projects in our region to better understand how these projects are designed and managed and the environmental and ecological benefits they bring to our region. The figure and photos on this slide show the preserve that's being established to offset the permanent impacts to waters of the state due to the Sapphire Solar Project, which was permitted earlier in this meeting. Next slide. Other progress made by our program is in our evaluation of whether the proposed project is the least environmentally damaging practicable alternative as required by the statewide procedures for dredger field discharges. We're now requiring dischargers to more thoroughly demonstrate that all appropriate and practicable measures to avoid and minimize loss or significant adverse impacts to beneficial uses of waters of the state have been implemented before we authorize impacts or consider compensatory mitigation. We've also incorporated language into our permits reflecting that we've reviewed the proposed project in comparison to other project alternatives during our application review process. The two figures on this slide are examples of projects that incorporated avoidance and minimization of resources into their project design, the Vega 5 solar project and the Vital Energy project. The figure on the left shows the Vega 5 solar project that's located in Imperial County, southeast of the Salton Sea. The red and black areas show the overall project impacts. The orange line shows the project's impacts to waters of the state. And the blue area shows waters of the state that the project was designed to avoid. The figure on the right shows the Vital Energy project located in San Bernardino County, west of the Colorado River. The black and red areas here show the project impacts to waters of the state, and the yellow areas are waters of the state that were avoided by the project design. Next slide. Finally, our program has increased the baseline compensatory mitigation ratio for all projects. Although we still determine compensatory mitigation requirements on a project-by-project basis, there are a few general guidelines we've agreed make sense in most cases. First, we're now defaulting to a 2-to-1 mitigation ratio for impacts to washes and ephemeral streams, which are the most commonly impacted resources in our region. We may require a higher ratio depending on the value of the resource being impacted and the proposed type, method, and/or location of the proposed compensatory mitigation. For projects that already had approved compensatory mitigation plans prior to these new higher standards, such as the Sapphire Solar Project, we're honoring those plans as long as the discharger has implemented appropriate avoidance and minimization measures, and we can otherwise determine that their compensatory mitigation plan is sufficient to offset the project's adverse impacts. I'd like to thank you for your time and attention, and I'll hand off to Angela for updates from the site cleanup unit. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Angela Garcia, and I am the program manager for the site cleanup and the salt and nutrient management planning program. Next slide, please. My team consists of five superstars. I would like to take a moment to recognize Fawn Lee and Teresa Ilari for their extraordinary commitment to the Colorado River Basin Regional Water Board. Fawn Lee, a water resource control engineer, has dedicated more than 26 years of service. In the last 20 years, Fawn has excelled in the site cleanup program. Fawn's organizational and project management skills have allowed her to grant over 130 case closure projects. With her workload, she always finds time to help answer questions for her peers, always with a smile. Her genuine commitment to safeguarding water quality for current and future generations is evident and deeply appreciated. Teresa Ilari, an environmental scientist, is celebrating 25 years of service this month. She began her career in basin planning and over the past 10 years has played a key role in advancing complex long-term cleanup projects that reflect her strong commitment to environmental protection and public health. Known for her vibrant personality, persistence, and goal-getter spirit, Teresa is relentless in ensuring projects move forward and never get lost in the process. Together, Teresa and Fawn exemplify dedication, expertise, and unwavering commitment to enhancing and preserving the waters of the state. Their sustained efforts, deep institutional knowledge, and professionalism have made a lasting impact in our organization and its mission. I am sincerely grateful for their many years of exemplary service and their continued dedication to protecting water quality for present and future generations. Then I have my three engineering geologists, Monica Aragon, the newest member of Team Superstars. Prior to joining the Regional Water Board, Monica brought more than 20 years of consulting experience working on high-profile environmental cleanup projects. Monica's extensive environmental investigations, field work, and groundwater remediation systems make her an extraordinary asset to our team. Jeff Fitzsimmons has dedicated 10 years to the Regional Water Boards, supported by more than 25 years of environmental and geotechnical experience. Jeff's career in environmental work spans decades, dating back to 1988, when he was excavating his first leaking underground storage tank. He has done a full circle in his career and is known as a project manager who does it all. Jesse Del Mastro has contributed more than 6 years of service with the Regional Water Board. Both Jesse and Jeff work on Department of Defense sites, and what makes this unique is that they are both veterans and have served in the Army. As a result, they are extremely familiar with military installations and their operations. I consider them our Department of Defense experts. At this time, there is one water resource control engineer vacancy, and interviews will be conducted in the coming weeks. Next slide, please. I have four programs. First is the Underground Storage Tank Program, which investigates unauthorized releases of petroleum from underground storage tanks or their distribution piping. Contaminants from these releases is limited to petroleum products and are investigated, and data is evaluated in accordance with the low-threat underground storage tank case closure policy. The site cleanup program involves environmental investigations that include soil, groundwater, and sediment contamination. These type of contaminants depend on the property operations and may include solvents, pesticides, heavy metals, volatile organic compounds, and other substances associated with manufacturing activities. The Department of Defense program focuses on projects related to unauthorized releases that occur only on military sites. These projects may involve both unauthorized releases from underground storage tank and site cleanup. Lastly, is the Salt and Nutrient Management Planning Program. The need to develop salt and nutrient management plans for groundwater basins in California began in 2009 when the State Water Resources Control Board adopted the water recycled policy. The purpose of the 2009 policy was to encourage increased use of recycled water while meeting state and federal water quality regulations. To accomplish this, the 2009 policy included a requirement to prepare salt and nutrient management plans and to address salt and nutrients from all sources be managed on a basin-wide or watershed-wide basis in a manner that ensures attained of water quality objectives and protection of beneficial uses. Next slide, please. In the Colorado River Basin region, three groundwater basins have been identified as priority basins for the development of salt and nutrient management plans. They are the Mojave, 29 Palms, and Coachella Valley groundwater basin. In the Mojave groundwater basin, six basins are in northwestern corner of the Colorado River Basin region. However, the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board is the lead agency because most of the Mojave groundwater basin lies within Lahontan's regional boundary and primary regulatory authority over groundwater quality in that area. Next is the 29 Palms groundwater basin. 29 Palms Water District has been conducting groundwater monitoring for portions of the Joshua Tree, 29 Palms Valley, and Dale Valley basins. Groundwater sampling during the 2025 calendar year completes 10 years of groundwater data. Staff have requested an updated groundwater monitoring implementation plan, and discussions have occurred for the need of groundwater data to determine potential impacts from septic systems. Next slide, please. In this slide, I have included a figure that shows the Coachella Valley groundwater basin, which includes three sub-basins, Indio, Mission Creek, and Desert Hot Springs. I want to highlight the sources of salt and nutrient loading identified during the development of the salt and nutrient management planning efforts. The goal of the Coachella Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Plan is to sustainably manage salt and nutrient loading in the basin in a manner that it protects its beneficial uses, preserve long-term sustainability, preserve affordable use of groundwater for all beneficial uses, and its protection of future generations. Next slide, please. This is a brief overview of the scope of work from the approved work plan. These tasks include the submittal of separate technical memorandums for the development of the Coachella Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Plan. The objectives of the technical memorandums 1, 2, 3 were to characterize the basin, what is the present water quality in respect to total dissolved solids and nitrates, how has total dissolved solids and nitrates changed over time, what is influencing the water quality, and identify the beneficial uses and the associated water quality needs for these uses. In Technical Memorandum 4, models were used to evaluate how water quality will change in the future based on different water management scenarios. The remainder technical memorandums will identify the beneficial uses and the associated water quality needs for these uses. The information obtained from the development of these technical memorandums will be used to prepare the Coachella Valley Groundwater Basin Salt and Nutrient Management Plan. Additionally, quarterly meetings are held to discuss the progress of the technical memorandums and Regional Water Board comments. Next slide, please. This slide summarizes the site cleanup program performance report forecasted for the fiscal year 25-26. Currently, there are 28 active sites in the Department of Defense program. This fiscal year, staff did not identify any sites that would move from investigation into remediation or receive site closure. Currently, we have five sites that meet closure requirements. However, due to a lack of federal funding, it is unclear when the case will proceed with the closure process. The site cleanup program currently has 20 active sites. This fiscal year, one project was identified to move from investigation into remediation. This milestone has been achieved. No sites were identified for closure. The underground storage tank program currently has 50 active sites. This fiscal year, two projects were identified that would move from site investigation into remediation. This milestone has been achieved. Four projects were identified to be granted closure. Three projects have been closed, and it's anticipated that three additional sites will be added to this milestone. This concludes my mid-year updates. Thank you for the opportunity to share the great work my team has accomplished over the past few months. And now, I'd like to share a unique site cleanup project, the first of its kind in our region, which will be presented by Jesse Del Mastro.
Good afternoon, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Jesse Del Mastro, and as Angela mentioned, I am an engineering geologist and project manager for cases within the Department of Defense, site cleanup, and underground storage tank programs. Today, I'll be presenting an interesting case, the Transformer soybean oil spill site located in Calpatria, California. This site is particularly interesting due to the complexity associated with cleaning up contamination from a transformer cooling oil leak located on a solar farm. Next slide, please. The site, highlighted in this red triangle, is located approximately 5 miles northeast of Calpatria and 10 miles east of the Salton Sea. The closest surface water bodies include the Highland Canal, which is adjacent to the site and is highlighted in blue, and the Alamo River, which is located approximately 7 miles west of the site. The entire parcel of land is approximately 111 acres, and the spill location occurred at a single transformer identified in the green box. As you can see here, the site is located approximately 1/4 mile from the Highland Canal. The spill location in the green box is approximately 400 square feet. The property is owned by Imperial Irrigation District and is leased to a corporation based in Massachusetts. Next slide, please. Some of the common uses of soybean oil include food such as salad dressings, oil when baking and frying food. Industrial uses include an additive in lubrication products as a carrier oil for agricultural insecticides, biodiesel and other fuels, and treatment of soil and groundwater contamination, for example, chlorinated solvents. In the health and beauty industry, soybean oil is a nutritional supplement for vitamin E and is used in moisturizers. The purpose of a transformer at a solar farm is to convert electrical energy generated by solar panels. The solar panels generate direct current energy, and the transformer converts the energy into alternating current that is compatible with the power grid. This right here on the top left is a picture of a transformer that is fully installed. Next slide, please. According to available information, in March of 2024, an electrical transformer containing soybean oil used as transformer cooling fluid experienced a leak over an undetermined amount of time and released approximately 250 to 300 gallons of soybean oil. The California Office of Emergency Services, CalOES, was notified on March 27, 2024, and a third-party contractor carried out the initial cleanup. The contractor deployed sorbent material in the spill zone and removed approximately 15 to 25 gallons of soybean oil beneath the transformer. No surface water or storm drains were identified as impacted near the release of the transformer fluid. The left image shows the inside of a transformer. It is believed that the leak originated from within this portion of the equipment. The center image is of the contractor responding to the spill and evaluating the situation. The top right image depicts the leak underneath the transformer. The bottom right image shows the saturated soil that looks like mud. Next slide, please. This site was especially difficult while conducting the investigation due to multiple reasons. Some of the delays included county ordinances that require specific licenses and permits. The coordination between multiple entities, such as the Regional Water Board, the property owner, the lessee, Imperial County, and numerous consultants and contractors. Due to the presence of surface and subsurface electrical equipment, multiple assessments needed to be conducted in order to safely clean up the contaminated soil. On June 4, 2025, drilling commenced at the site during the collection of soil and groundwater samples, as seen in the top left image. The drill rig experienced a catastrophic mechanical failure while drilling boring 1, with the subsequent repairs occurring the following day. Fieldwork was completed on June 9, 2025. The sample results indicated that the soil and groundwater were impacted with total petroleum hydrocarbons, diesel, and oil ranges. Based on the sample results, the site required cleanup. The selected soil cleanup method was excavation of contaminated soil above the Tier 1 environmental screening levels. Decommissioning the transformer for soil excavation included shutting off all power to the surrounding electrical components, electrical crew disconnecting all surface and subsurface electrical utility lines, fiber optic cables draining the soybean oil in the replacement transformer, removing the transformer from the concrete pads, and finally, removing the concrete pads with the 61-foot-tall crane. The top left image is of the drilling crew at the drill rig prior to the catastrophic failure. The concrete pads that needed to be removed were approximately 2 feet wide, 2 feet tall, and 32 feet long. The image on the bottom left shows the electrical crew removing the dirt surrounding the two concrete pads. Some of the fiber optic cables and electrical conduits are located where the black arrow is pointing. The image on the top right is a close-up image of some of the electrical components that needed to be disconnected from the transformer. The image on the bottom right shows the 61-foot-tall crane lifting one of the concrete pads. Next slide, please. These are images of several pieces of heavy machinery that were used to remove the contaminated soil. The soil was placed in a large red roll-off bin truck and taken to a designated disposal location. Next slide, please. The field crew used site conditions to excavate until it appeared that the contaminated oil was removed. Some of the detection methods included observing distinctive soil color change, smell, two types of water tests, and confirmation sampling. The image on the left has multiple features that I would like to point out. We see darker staining that is located on the right side of the topmost arrow, and it indicates that contaminated soil likely remains in place when compared to the soil that is located behind this individual. Field crew also discovered black material located at the bottom of the excavation where the bottom arrow is pointing. The material had a distinctive odor that was different from the contaminated soil. The field crew determined it was likely soybean oil that was actively undergoing decomposition. The picture on the right shows the excavation as it continued expanding to remove the black material. As I mentioned previously, several water tests were completed prior to collecting confirmation samples. The consultant placed the contaminated soil into handheld containers with water to observe if the soil floated due to the presence of oil. Once the excavated soil no longer floated in water or smelled like the soybean oil, soil samples were placed in a special sample collection containers with a measured amount of bottled water. The containers had a small cube that contained several types of dyes that react to gasoline, diesel, and fuel oil when present above 500 parts per million, and a single styrofoam ball that changes color from the dye. We were looking for either the styrofoam ball or the waters to change color. At first, we were not sure if the dyes would respond to the soybean oil due to not being a petroleum product. The first samples in the middle bottom image did not detect soybean oil despite the soil containing oil and odor. The field crews and I collaborated in diagnosing the issue, and as you can see on the far right, the neon water displayed a positive result once the sampling methods were corrected. The excavation activities were unexpectedly extended for several more days due to the confirmation sampling results exceeding concentration limits. The excavation was expanded in several phases until each of the confirmation samples came back under the concentration limits. Several meetings were held between the Regional Water Board staff, numerous consultants and contractors, and the lessee to ensure that the fieldwork was progressing towards reaching regulatory standards. Approximately 50 cubic yards were excavated from the site. Next slide, please. The next steps for the site include the submittal of a removal action completion report that details the cleanup activities. The report will include figures and diagrams that depict the amount of soil removed, sampling locations, sampling results, and recommendations from the consultant. Once this information has been evaluated by Regional Water Board staff, we will proceed with either conducting further investigation, cleanup, or recommending the site for closure. Next slide, please. I'd like to say thank you to the lessee, property owner, numerous consultants and contractors, Imperial County staff, and Regional Water Board staff regarding the collaboration with the assessment and cleanup of this site. This case has been uniquely challenging and rewarding to work on. Next, we have Bradley Bowers, engineering geologist, and he will be providing an update regarding the land disposal unit. Thank you.
Thank you, Jesse. Good afternoon, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. My name is Bradley Bowers, and I'm an engineering geologist in the land disposal unit. Before going into program update slides, I would like to introduce you to the staff of the land disposal unit. The two newest members of the unit are Andrea Varela and myself. We both started on the same day, May 1st, 2025, and are approaching 1 year here at the Regional Water Board. Andrea is a Water Resource Control Engineer, or WRCE, and she works in the Discharge to Land program on municipal and industrial discharges. She also manages our financial assistance programs and recently earned her professional engineer license. I work in the land disposal program, managing Title 27 cases. I'm developing an expertise in regulating mines and geothermal facilities, and I represent our region in the California Agency Abandoned Mines Program Working Group. I earned my professional geologist license in 2023. Next, we have Kevin Gonzalez, another WRCE, who started here in March of 2024. He works in the discharge to land program on municipal wastewater and industrial discharges and specializes in the recycled water program. Then we have Adrian Lopez, another WRCE, who works in the discharge to land program, and he also works on municipal and industrial wastewater discharges. He is our team expert on local agency management programs, and Adrian has been with the region since September of 2023. Brianna Allen is the other engineering geologist in our unit. Unfortunately, she could not be here with us today, but she also manages land disposal cases and is working on becoming a subject matter expert on all things Title 27. She has been with the region since January of 2024. Last, but certainly not least, we have Julia Mestis, WRCE, who has been with our unit the longest. She started in September 2022 and is the program manager for the California-Mexico Border Program. Julia also works on a variety of discharge to land and land disposal sites, including water treatment plants and small domestic sites. Thank you, team. Next slide, please. For the mid-year update, I will be presenting the target goals and accomplishments of the land disposal unit in the discharge to land, land disposal, and California-Mexico border programs. Afterwards, I will provide a brief presentation about one of the projects our unit is currently working on, the expansion of Castle Mountain Mine. Next slide, please. This slide shows the target goals for the unit's discharge to land program staff for fiscal year 2025-2026. As of this past December, three waste discharge requirement orders were scheduled to be updated, two have been adopted, and one is in progress. 10 notices of applicability were scheduled to be issued, one has been issued, and nine are in progress. Four rescission and substitution orders were scheduled for adoption, two have been adopted, and two are pending. 55 facility inspections were planned for this fiscal year, and 26 have been completed. Monitoring and reporting program updates were not included in the unit's target goals. However, this program has updated three and has another four in progress. Next slide, please. For the land disposal program or Title 27 staff, the unit's target is to update two landfill waste discharge requirement orders, and both are currently in progress. Two other land disposal waste discharge requirement orders are scheduled for updates. One has been completed, the other is in progress and currently going through internal review. Two enrollments into the closed landfill general order are scheduled, both are currently in progress. The unit's target was to perform 18 landfill inspections, of which eight have been completed. 16 non-landfill Title 27 inspections were planned and eight have been completed. Again, not included in the program's target goals for this fiscal year were monitoring and reporting program updates. However, four are currently in progress. Next slide, please. The land disposal unit also manages the California-Mexico border program. Monthly monitoring of the New River at the international border is the first target goal. 12 sampling events were planned for this fiscal year, and six have been accomplished. Additionally, unit staff attend multiple meetings throughout the year related to border issues. The Regional Water Board is a member of the International Boundary and Water Commission's Binational Technical Committee. Meetings for this committee are held every 2 months. Julia Mestis and other unit staff attend these meetings in person. Five meetings were tentatively scheduled for fiscal year 25-26, and staff have attended two meetings so far. Members of this technical committee provide updates on programs on both sides of the border that address water quality issues in the New River. The California-Mexico Border Relation Council meets annually. Regional Water Board staff attended the annual meeting for 2025 in September. A meeting for 2026 has not yet been scheduled, but unit staff plan to attend when it is. Next, I will provide a brief presentation on one of Brianna Allen's current projects, the Castle Mountain Mine Phase 2 expansion. Next slide, please. The Castle Mountain Mine is an open pit gold mining operation that uses heap leach methods for ore processing. It's located in eastern San Bernardino County in the historic Hart Mining District, which is northwest of Needles, and it is owned and operated by Equinox Gold Corporation. This slide shows the areas of the proposed expansion as well as some of the currently regulated waste management units at the facility. The areas outlined in black show the proposed expansion of heat pads, and the areas outlined in red and purple show the currently regulated pads at the facility. An update to the facility's waste discharge requirements for the expansion is tentatively scheduled for fiscal year 26-27, following the completion of the environmental review process. The phase two expansion would extend the life of this mine by 30 years and would quadruple the annual mining rate from 18 million tons to 80 million tons of ore. This increased mining operation would require an additional 2,250 acre feet of water per year, which is approximately 2 million gallons of water per day. If the expansion is approved, the Regional Water Board will update our waste discharge requirements to regulate the additional waste management units. This expansion is currently going through the CEQA NEPA process. It's worth noting that the Regional Water Board has been asked to be a participating agency in developing the EIR and EIS for this proposed expansion. Regional Water Board staff are meeting with the CEQA NEPA lead agencies, providing guidance on the Water Board's regulatory requirements, with the goal of assuring any Water Board concerns are addressed during the environmental review process. Branna Allen and I recently attended a site visit at the facility led by U.S. Bureau of Land Management, who's the lead, federal lead agency, and San Bernardino County is the CEQA lead agency. Next slide, please. One potential concern that our staff discussed with BLM is the formation and regulation of open pit mine lakes. Currently, we do not have any open pit mine lakes to regulate because they typically don't form in our region due to our arid climate and the depth to groundwater beneath our mining facilities. Open pit mine lakes form when the removal of material creates an open depression and groundwater, surface water, or stormwater runoff accumulate into the pit. Depending on the geology of the exposed rocks, evaporation rates, natural water chemistry, and other factors, these artificial water bodies can pose a threat to water quality and require remediation. Although in other regions, some have been repurposed for recreation, tourism, or used for industrial water supply. In the diagram on the slide, the pit lake is the green dark area in the center. You could ignore the trees in the stream as those are not present at Castle Mountain Mine. But if you follow the direction of the groundwater flow lines to the pit lake, you will see how a pit deeper than the water table will form a lake. The pit at Castle Mountain Mine is proposed to be excavated below the water table, so a terminal pit lake like this will form after mining ceases and groundwater seeps into the pit. In other regions, these pits are regulated by individual WDRs as surface waters of the state. The formation of open pit mines is a potential water quality issue that will be addressed during the environmental review that's currently in progress. We do not yet have enough information to determine what form of regulation will apply here, but the likely applicable regulation is Anti-Degradation Policy 6816. Next slide, please. During our site visit with the discharger and BLM to discuss the expansion, Water Board staff also performed a compliance inspection of the ore processing facility. The pictures on this slide show some of the regulated waste management units at Castle Mountain Mine. The photo on the top left with the purple glove shows carbon used in the carbon in column plant. The carbon is used to remove gold from the leach solution for further processing off-site. The series of towers next to that photo are the carbon in column or CIC plant, which houses the carbon for gold adsorption. Two additional CIC plants are proposed to be built during this expansion. The photo on the top right shows the current event pond, which was built to capture and contain process solution in the event excess stormwater or solution occurs at the facility. And the photo on the bottom left shows a profile view of one of the heap leach pads. The photo on the bottom right shows the heap leach pad from above. And in the bottom right of that bottom right photo, you can see the conveyance line which carries gold-bearing solution from the pad to the CIC plant. Now I'd like to invite Assistant Executive Officer Kai Dunn back to the podium to provide enforcement updates. Thank you.
Good afternoon again, Chair Perez, member of the board, and a member of public. My name is Kai Dunn, the Assistant Executive Officer for the region, and also I'm the Chief Prosecutor for the Region 7. I will provide a very brief update for the enforcement program in the Region 7. This slide shows the enforcement action that has been issued since July 1st last year. There are a total of 249 actions, including notice of violation for non-compliance, mandatory minimum penalty for NPDES violation, and administrative civil liability complaint and order. Next slide. Enforcement impacts all the programs you have heard previously. The enforcement program is to ensure the discharge comply with water quality law, regulation, policy, and plan to protect water of the state and also provide timely and consistent enforcement. Show on this slide, there are major enforcement priority for this year. There are mandatory minimum penalty, sanitary sewer overflow, non-compliance farmer or grower to the agricultural general order in the Coachella Valley, and the non-compliant homeowner to the septic tank prohibition in Yucca Valley. I will discuss each of the priority in more detail in the next slide. The first priority is a mandatory minimum penalty known as a MMP. MMP are associated with NPDES program. NMP set a minimum penalty of $3,000 that is assessed for each serious violation as defined in the regulation, and for each chronic violation, not counting the first three violations. This minimum penalty apply to permit effluent limitation and the reporting requirements. This slide lists five MMP we have assessed during this fiscal year where the case has been settled and the discharges are required to pay the penalty. Next slide. The second priority is the sanitary sewer overflow known as SSO. Sanitary sewer overflow is the release of untreated or partially treated sewage from municipal pipeline, often caused by blockages, severe weather, pipeline failure, or power outage. This spill can damage property, contaminate water resource, and pose significant health risk. This slide presents the two most recent SSO incident report to our office, and the staff have ensured necessary action such as cleaning and the repair has been taken by the discharger. Next slide. The third priority is to address farmer or grower in Coachella Valley who did not enroll in the agricultural general order as a member of a coalition. In 2020, the regional board adopted the general waste discharge requirement for discharge of waste from irrigated agricultural land for dischargers that are member of a coalition group in the Coachella Valley. Initially, about 60 farmer or grower did not enroll in the general order as a member of a coalition in the Coachella Valley. In September 2024, staff sent a letter to those non-compliant farmer or grower requiring to obtain regulatory coverage. And in August 2025, the prosecution team issued a directive order requiring non-compliant farmer and grower to obtain regulatory coverage. And on December 3rd, 2025, State Board Office of Enforcement stepped in. They issued enforcement letter to five non-compliant farmer and grower, that including a proposed fine and the next step to achieve compliance. As of today, three grower comply with the order to join the coalition as a members. Staff will continue to work with the Office of Enforcement to assist non-compliance farmer or grower to obtain regulatory coverage. Next slide. The fourth priority is to continue enforcing the Yucca Valley septic tank prohibition. Last September, three administrative civil liability complaints were issued to homeowner for not complying with cease and desist order to connect to the sewer. And at the December board meeting, two administrative civil liability order were issued for failure to connection, and one complaint was withdrawn after the homeowner complete the sewer connection. Next slide. We also identify some challenges with the enforcement as we moving forward. I would like to address settlement negotiation. Settlement negotiation involve exchanging information between regional board staff and the discharger regarding the basis and the calculation of the penalty amount. Once both parties agree on the penalty, discussion may begin on implementing qualified project specified in the enforcement policy. There are three types of project: supplemental environmental project, we call a SEP, and the compliance project, compliance plan, and the enhanced compliance action. Staff often spend considerable amount of time helping discharger to identify project that comply with enforcement policy and the SEP policy. This process can significantly extend the time required to close a case. The second challenge is staffing. Region 7 currently has one technical position dedicated to enforcement activity 100% as enforcement coordinator. The previous enforcement coordinator was promoted and moved to a neighboring regional board. So we are in the process of filling that position. It will take some time to have a new staff on board and start manage the enforcement workload. In addition, we will have a staff from MPDS unit partially working on the enforcement case. So with this, conclude my mid-year summary of enforcement activity. Thank you for your attention. The staff from all programs are ready for questions.
Slides. First of all, I'll say I'm very impressed by all of the departments. We have a very wonderful staff here, and we, at least me as a board member, I feel very fortunate. But on that, if you go back to slide 64, you said five letters were sent out. Is that five of the 60 farmers who didn't sign up? And how did you pick which five?
Okay, there's some grower, they kind of know that and enroll into the coalition. And for those five, because it goes through the enforcement process. So some of the grower early received those enforcement letter. So we pick up five is we have a complete enforcement process, so we can bring to a higher level of enforcement action. So that's the first five we select, and I think that will be different phases. So we cannot do like 60 at one time. We probably the maximum we do 5-6 and at one time, and hope that send a message to the farmer or grower, and they will join the coalition before we take any additional action.
And one of the presenters mentioned like 30 construction facilities were visited. Is that new construction? Is that single family homes, commercial properties, wastewater facilities?
Well, I think in my recollection, we have around 340 construction sites, not mean all the new construction sites. So if they apply the construction general permit to cover their activity, so until they require complete and terminate a general permit, so they always will be on our side. So there is a requirement from US EPA. We need to inspect 10% of our total site. So that's always, we kind of come out like 30 some site or 40 site, because totally we have a 400. If we have a new site, probably will be on our inspection priority to go do an inspection as soon as we can. But
so is a residential housing project considered a construction site?
That will be like a large residential if they have over half acre lot. So if the construction or disturbed land less than half acre, so they are not subject to a construction stormwater general order. Mm. If they have a lot and they disturb the land over a half acre, and then they are subject to that the general order. So they will be they should enroll into the general order, construction
and
general order.
New tanks for gasoline stations, gas stations, do they have a longer life than the old tanks that had all the issues? Or do they have to be replaced every 50 years also?
Well, I think the new tank have a new requirement. They have to have a double tank, and then they have a different kind of material. So the corrosion may not happen. So it should be a longer time. Maybe Monica has some more.
Good afternoon, Chair Perez, members of the board. I am Monica Aragon Guzman, working with the underground storage tank unit. To answer your question regarding the longevity of the new tanks, current tanks are made of fiberglass material, and under the underground storage tank requirements, they're also supposed to be double-walled. And depending on where they're constructed, there would be other requirements such as concrete vaulting if they have they're within groundwater area, like shallow groundwater areas and things like that. So the expectation would be that such constructions would be less likely to leak because they have secondary containment specifications.
Are there any restrictions on the size that they can't build it so it's not too big?
They come standard. You have 12,000, 15,000, 10,000 gallon tanks for gasoline and diesel or aviation. Mm-hmm. And then you would have smaller 1,000 to 500 gallon tanks for waste oil or those kinds of thicker types of fuels.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Welcome.
Yeah, I would just like to reiterate the comment. It was a pleasure to hear from some voices that we don't often hear from during these meetings, and I especially appreciated the focus on some unique projects. It was just a pleasure to learn about all of those things. And two things struck me. One was just the amount of effort that we're putting towards outreach, producing materials, doing tribal engagement. I just love to see it. I know that's been a huge push for this board over the last couple of years to increase capacity in that regard. So it was really lovely to see all of the efforts we've made in that regard too. And I know I also personally appreciated all the efforts we're putting now into increasing our capacity and knowledge base for mitigation. I suspect that some of that impetus was from former comments I've made in earlier permits. So anyway, I just love to see the it paying off, and I think it's really going to improve our environmental stewardship across the region. So again, just thank you, staff. Thank you, executive office.
Thank you.
for coordinating this. It was just a wonderful presentation.
I have one other question on slide 6, the org chart. Are they going to put it up?
Yes.
So when I look at this and I look at the second row, it looks like there's a position for surface water protection section and groundwater protection section. Is that accurate?
Board Member Music, yes, that is accurate.
It's what?
Typically, we would have a section chief over each of those branches. The groundwater protection section has been held open for I don't know how long for some years, and the surface water protection section was until recently managed by CHI.
Okay, but so are those positions you are intending on?
So as I alluded to earlier. I'm exploring a reorganization here, and so the just identifying opportunities for tightening up our reporting structure. I've worked with Dr. Dunn on the prospect of holding the surface water protection section manager position in abeyance and moving that full-time management position over to groundwater protection section because I only have one to work with currently.
And the executive management, what positions are those?
That would be the executive officer and the assistant executive officer.
Okay. To me, if you put a little bracket, you put EO and AEO, it would kind of make sense. And then the bottom one, it would be nice, I think, if you just added one word like unit chief or program chief, and who, because you have those positions filled. It's kind of a dual role. You're showing departments, but then you're showing individuals like with Hilda in the administrative and support services.
Thank you for the comment. We'll certainly integrate that into future reports.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
I'm done.
Okay. Thank you very much. It was very informative, and I do want to reiterate what Peter said about the community outreach. Thank you so much for, I was one of those individuals that was really pushing for that, and I'd also like to offer some support to for community outreach as well, if you guys have some time. Thank you. Next item is number 8. We'll now hear from our a report from our executive officer, Michael Placencia.
Good afternoon again, Chair Perez, members of the board, and members of the public. First, I'd like to, I'm Michael Placencia, Executive Officer, and first I'd like to thank our unit managers, their staff, and all the and everyone else who supported the development and presentation that you just heard. It took a lot of work. I'm very happy to hear that it was well received. I will now highlight a few items from my written report that's in your binders. First, during the month of November 2025, Tom Brown and Jose Figueroa of the MPDES unit performed New River sampling. During the month of December 2025, Fonley and Jeff Fitzsimmons of the site cleanup unit performed New River sampling. Sampling events were carried out in coordination with Julia Mestas of the land disposal unit for the New River sampling program by preparing sample bottles, coordinating lab contracts, and performing record keeping. Also in November, regional board leadership and staff attended Alianza's Thriving Salton Sea Communities one-year anniversary. Executive Director Sylvia Paz and Environmental Justice Campaign Manager Aidy Rodriguez highlighted the campaign's progress, including community outreach, water quality monitoring, and new Salton Sea region land use alignment project dashboard for tracking development in Coachella Valley and Imperial Valleys. Regional board staff met with Alianza and Lideres Campesinas organizers to discuss youth outreach, Salton Sea information, and community campaigns. Now I'd like to present some recent staffing changes. As you've heard from earlier today, it is my pleasure to welcome to his first board meeting, but to welcome our new Assistant Executive Officer, Dr. Kai Dunn. Kai has been with the Water Boards for 26 years, and his last 20 with our Region 7. He has extensive experience managing multiple units and programs, and most recently served as the Surface Water Protection Division Section Chief. Dr. Dunn holds bachelor's degrees and master's degrees in science and earned his PhD in environmental engineering from USC in 1998 and has been registered as a professional engineer in the state of California since 2001. Additionally, I'd like to welcome a new water resource control engineer to the EMPDS unit, Logan's unit, Matthew Perez. Matthew was already introduced, but I want to highlight him. He's new to the team. Matthew recently graduated from the University of California in Davis, where he received a Bachelor of Science degree in Chemical Engineering. Following graduation, he interned at a winery, which is also one of his personal interests. Matthew joined our staff on January 20th. Finally, I have one more recognition I would like to bring to the board. As you know, professionalism and customer service are twin pillars of the public-facing efforts any effective organization can make. Recently, we received a glowing review from one of our stakeholders who was working with one of our staff. In their letter, they detailed the outstanding advocacy and technical support they received from this Region 7 employee. Needless to say, I was surprised and proud of this recognition. So I'd like to call up Angela Garcia, Site Cleanup Unit Chief, to share more with you the details of this recognition we received for one of her staff. Angela.
Thank you again. I wasn't planning to come here and present this, but since I've been in this position, I've been advocating that for us to be able to move a project, and most of our projects have been here for decades, that we need to work collaboratively to get a project through. And sometimes in the beginning, things don't always, you know, there's some contentious, a lot of years of data collecting, but with no path for closure. But for this one, we managed to get it to closure, and I want to bring in Teresa Ilari to here, and I want to present this to her. Teresa worked several hours to try to collaborate with the Imperial Irrigation District consultants to get us to closure. And after several years of it being stalled, she got it to closure at the end of the year. And it took a lot of effort, a lot of collaboration, and a lot of brainstorming on Friday afternoon. So I just want to give this to you, Teresa.
I'll give you the floor in a second. Firstly, if you haven't noticed, Teresa did not expect us to do this, so she's being very gracious. It's a very short statement, so if you'll permit me, Chair Perez, to read through it. It says, Dear Mr. Plasencia, the Imperial Irrigation District acknowledges receipt of the letter of the low-threat underground storage tank closure at the IID headquarters in Imperial, California, and appreciates the Water Board's decision to close the regulatory case. The IID would also like to call your attention to the support, timely responses, and collaborative efforts put forth by Ms. Angela Garcia and Ms. Teresa Ilari. Their diligence in providing timely feedback and guidance created a path towards progress in a halted closure process. By helping streamline the process, they allowed both the Imperial Irrigation District and the regulating agency to collaborate in a constructive manner and produce the desired outcome for both organizations. And this is signed by the superintendent.
Great job.
Well, I really appreciate this, and I did not expect it. But I have to say, this was a group effort, so I feel really honored to have gotten this, but I think, you know, this was a unit thing that we all worked on. And I want to say thank you to David, because he was really beneficial in this. So thank you, everyone.
This concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Any questions for Michael? The board. Thank you very much. Okay, next item, number 9, board member comments and suggestions for future agenda items. Does any member have anything that they want to discuss in the future?
You know, the last thing I want to do is burden staff with future agenda items. But the presentation regarding Valley Sanitation, I think it'd be nice to know how many wastewater facilities we have, say, in Riverside, San Bernardino County. I mean, in the Colorado region here, forget about Imperial. What are their discharge requirements? Where are they discharging? Just to give the board an idea of how many we have. You know, I was just trying to count myself, and I figured there must be at least 10 or 12 counting Beaumont and Banning, excluding Imperial County. And, you know, a one-page report, just a summary of what we have and what their requirements are. And is everyone basically being treated the same within our region? And once again, I'd like to thank the staff. That was, I mean, I would like to get updates like this every 6 months, not necessarily from each section, but maybe they could periodically do it because it was very informative and I appreciated it.
Yeah, I'd like to thank the staff, all the staffs too, who came up today and told us all about their units and what was going on. You have a lot of work on your hands, and it is good to see that we have more employees, more staff members that have been hired lately. So, well, thank you, everybody. You're doing a great job.
If I may, Madam Chair, Director Music wants me to be the bad guy. So I agreed. I do think that he brought up an important point about groundwater, and I know that it's a big conversation in our community as well. So I think in the future, not like, you know, next month, because I know it's going to take a while, I think a good study session would probably be a good idea, just to take a look at that impact as well, because I know there is a lot of confusion sometimes, you know. Where does it go? Where does it go before it gets to the sea? And by the time it gets to the sea, what does it look like? So I think that's an important topic, and we should explore it. I will echo the sentiments of my fellow board members in that was very informative. Really appreciate all the work that all of you do and continue to do, and I'm glad that, you know, it seems like it's becoming cohesive and coming together. And I am very proud of you, Mr. Plasencia, for allowing staff to be highlighted that way, because I think it's important, you know, because everybody knows you're the big boss, but without these folks, you'd be in trouble. So I appreciate all the work from staff, and thank you so much for bringing that forward and educating us on what everyone does and highlighting the successes and the challenges. I think that's always important as well. So thank you to all of you out there that do a great job. And I think that's it for me. No. Thank you.
Any other board members?
Not here.
No? Okay. All right. Next, chair's report. The only thing I have is from our meetings is a reminder of upcoming mandatory board trainings. I don't know if you guys received it. If not, I have a link.
From Hawking?
Yes, from Hawking. Okay. Next item is selection of chair and vice chair for 2026. I do want to offer to serve another term only because I think it's taking me this long to get acclimated. It could be because I'm fairly new, or my very first time. Otherwise, if anybody wants to nominate individuals for next year.
I'm not opposed to your recommendation.
I think she would like to continue.
As chair.
As chair. After doing it for a year, she feels more experienced and that she can do a better job moving forward.
Yes.
Right?
Thank you. Yes, thank you.
No one could possibly do a better job, though.
I don't mean better
Don't say
job,
that. You have a lot of personalities.
More experience to make your decisions
thank you.
Easier.
Appreciate that.
I'll nominate you for chair.
Okay, thank you.
I'll second.
I accept. Nominations for vice chair?
I mean, I'm willing to continue as well. I feel the same way as Vivian after being in the role and, you know, going to Sacramento and just listening to all of that. It's definitely a big difference from, you know, just being here. So if you all are okay with it, I would like to continue.
I'll nominate B for vice chair.
I'll second. And I know we were supposed to pull it one at a time. Can we do both, David? Or one?
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be a ticket.
How about yay in the first and nay in the second?
Just kidding. Okay. It's a combo.
Can we have a roll call, please? Mary? Can we have the roll call vote?
Chair Perez?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gonzalez?
Aye.
Board Member Beltran?
Aye.
Board Member Music?
Aye.
Board Member Satin?
Aye.
Board Member Wright?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Confidence.
Especially Ed. Thank you, Ed. I'll try. Okay, are there, David, Council, are there any matters to discuss in closed session?
Not today.
Not today, okay. Next meeting is scheduled for April 14th, 2 p.m. It will be held in the city of Needles in Riverside County. We are adjourned.
2 p.m.?
2 p.m.
In Needles.
Needles.
Did we get an overnight stay there?
Yes.
I got to figure out how to get there.
Yes, it is a two-day board meeting. So.
Is it?
Yeah.
I didn't see that.
Which night? The night
before, the
night after?
Or both?
TBD. Board members, it became necessary to cancel the March meeting, and so the next scheduled meeting is for April 14th, and it will be a two-day board meeting, an overnight stay, plus a tour the following morning of the Topak site, which is our largest site cleanup project.
What day was that, April 1st?
That would be the afternoon and evening of April 14th, followed by a morning tour April 15th.
Okay. Did you say
just get your taxes done before
there was
that.
No March meeting? Is that what you just said?
Yes, Board Member Wright, we needed to cancel the March meeting.
April 14th at 2 p.m. and the following day a tour, correct?
That is correct, and I will be sending out a logistics briefing on that by the end of this week.
Okay.
That's tax day.
That's right, so get it done beforehand. April. Or file an extension.
Uh-huh. Get your taxes. Oh, no.
The weekend.
All righty.
Oh, no.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you very much.